was somewhere in the middle. "Professor Langdon," called a young man with curly hair in the back row, "if Masonry is not a secret society, not a corporation, and not a religion, then what is it?" "Well, if you were to ask a Mason, he would offer the following definition. Masonry is a system of morality, veiled in allegory, and illustrated by symbols." "Sounds to me like a euphemism for freaky cult." "Freaky, you say?" "Hell yes," the kid said, standing up. "I heard what they do inside those secret buildings. Weird candlelight rituals with coffins and nooses and drinking wine out of skulls. Now that's freaky." Langdon scanned the class. "Does that sound freaky to anyone else?" "Yes," they all chimed in. Langdon feigned a sad sigh. "Too bad. If that's too freaky for you, then I know you'll never want to join my cult." Silence settled over the room. The student from the women's center looked uneasy. "You're in a cult?" Langdon nodded and lowered his voice to a conspiratorial whisper. "Don't tell anyone, but on the pagan day of the sun god Ra, I kneel at the foot of an ancient instrument of torture and consume ritualistic symbols of blood and flesh." The class looked horrified. Langdon shrugged. "And if any of you care to join me, come to the Harvard Chapel on Sunday, kneel beneath the crucifix, and take Holy Communion." The classroom remained silent. Langdon winked. "Open your minds, my friends. We all fear what we do not understand." The tolling of a clock began echoing through the Capitol corridors. 7 o'clock. Robert Langdon was now running. Talk about a dramatic entrance. Passing through the house connecting corridor, he spotted the entrance to the National Statuary Hall and headed straight for it. As he neared the door, he slowed to a nonchalant stroll and took several deep breaths. Buttoning his jacket, he lifted his chin ever so slightly and turned the corner just as the final chime sounded. Showtime. As Professor Robert Langdon strode into the National Statuary Hall, he raised his eyes and smiled warmly. An instant later, his smile evaporated. He stopped dead in his tracks. Something was very, very wrong. Chapter 7. Catherine Solomon hurried across the parking lot through the cold rain, wishing she had worn more than jeans and a cashmere sweater. As she neared the building's main entrance, the roar of the giant air purifiers got louder. She barely heard them, her ears still ringing from the phone call she'd just received. "That which your brother believes is hidden in D.C., it can be found." Catherine found the notion almost impossible to believe. She and the caller still had much to discuss and had agreed to do so later that evening. Reaching the main doors, she felt the same sense of excitement she always felt upon entering the gargantuan building. "Nobody knows this place is here." The sign on the door announced, "Smithsonian Museum Support Center, SMSC. The Smithsonian Institution, despite having more than a dozen massive museums on the National Mall, had a collection so huge that only 2% of it could be on display at any one time. The other 98% of the collection had to be stored somewhere, and that somewhere was here. Not surprisingly, this building was home to an astonishingly diverse array of artifacts. Giant Buddhas, handwritten codices, poisoned darts from New Guinea, jewel-encrusted knives, a kayak made of baleen. Equally mind-boggling were the building's natural treasures: plesiosaur skeletons, a priceless meteorite collection, a giant squid, even a collection of elephant skulls brought back from an African safari by Teddy Roosevelt. But none of this was why the Smithsonian secretary, Peter Solomon, had introduced his sister to the SMSC 3 years ago. He had brought her to this place not to behold scientific marvels, but rather to create them. And that was exactly what Catherine had been doing. Deep within this building, in the darkness of the most remote recesses, was a small scientific laboratory unlike any other in the world. The recent breakthroughs Catherine had made here in the field of noetic science had ramifications across every discipline, from physics to history to philosophy to religion. "Soon everything will change," she thought. As Catherine entered the lobby, the front desk guard quickly stashed his radio and yanked the earplugs from his ears. "Miss Solomon," he smiled broadly.
"Redskins?"
He blushed, looking guilty.
"Pre-game."
She smiled.
"I won't tell."
She walked to the metal detector and emptied her pockets. When she slid the gold Cartier watch from her wrist, she felt the usual pang of sadness. The timepiece had been a gift from her mother for Catherine's 18th birthday. Almost 10 years had now passed since her mother had died violently, passing away in Catherine's arms.
"So, Miss Solomon," the guard whispered jokingly, "are you ever going to tell anybody what you're doing back there?"
She glanced up.
"Someday, Kyle. Not tonight."
"Come on," he pressed. "A secret lab? In a secret museum? You must be doing something cool."
Miles beyond cool, Catherine thought, as she collected her things.
The truth was that Catherine was doing science so advanced that it no longer even resembled science. Chapter 8 Robert Langdon stood frozen in the doorway of the National Statuary Hall and studied the startling scene before him. The room was precisely as he remembered it, a balanced semicircle built in the style of a Greek amphitheater. The graceful arched walls of sandstone and Italian plaster were punctuated by columns of variegated breccia, interspersed with the nation's statuary collection, life-size statues of 38 great Americans standing in a semicircle on a stark expanse of black and white marble tile. It was exactly as Langdon had recalled from the lecture he had once attended here, except for one thing. Tonight, the room was empty. No chairs, no audience, no Peter Solomon. Just a handful of tourists milling around aimlessly, oblivious to Langdon's grand entrance. Did Peter mean the rotunda? He peered down the south corridor toward the rotunda and could see tourists milling around in there, too. The echoes of the clock chime had faded. Langdon was now officially late. He hurried back into the hallway and found a docent. "Excuse me, the lecture for the Smithsonian event tonight. Where is that being held?" The docent hesitated.
"I'm not sure, sir. When does it start?"
"Now?" The man shook his head. "I don't know about any Smithsonian event this evening. Not here, at least." Bewildered, Langdon hurried back toward the center of the room, scanning the entire space. Is Solomon playing some kind of joke? Langdon couldn't imagine it. He pulled out his cell phone and the fax page from this morning and dialed Peter's number. His phone took a moment to locate a signal inside the enormous building. Finally, it began to ring. The familiar southern accent answered.
"Peter Solomon's office. This is Anthony. May I help you?"
"Anthony," Langdon said with relief. "I'm glad you're still there. This is Robert Langdon. There seems to be some confusion about the lecture. I'm standing in the statuary hall, but there's nobody here. Has the lecture been moved to a different room?"
"I don't believe so, sir. Let me check."
His assistant paused a moment.
"Did you confirm with Mr. Solomon directly?"
Langdon was confused. "No, I confirmed with you, Anthony."